The various charts and graphs are heading in two directions on COVID-19 at the moment. The graph of vaccinated people continues to head upwards, especially now that many vaccine mandates are in effect. The graph of new infections continues to drop across the country, though not as steeply in some places. So there's a basis for some optimism and a lot of questions still. We invite Dr. Jim Shames, the medical director at Jackson County Health and Human Services, to join us once a week to answer questions from me and you about COVID. He is back on the line. Dr. Shames, thanks for joining us.
Oh, good morning. Glad to be here.
So while the numbers are dropping in Jackson County, and they did certainly peak about 4 to 6 weeks ago with some rather stark numbers of new cases, they have come down back into something more like the range they were in during the last spike last winter. But we got a sobering reminder from your agency yesterday that Jackson County has just reached 300 deaths.
Yeah, it's a real sad moment. I was thinking about what 300 deaths look like, imagining a big movie theater somewhere in town, just full of people, and it's sobering. That's a lot of our citizens, a lot of our friends and relatives.
It really is. Now, I noticed that death is a lagging indicator has been spoken by everyone from the Lieutenant Governor of Texas to people in our newsroom. When people say that, what do they mean?
Well, you identify a case, and that case may or may not get sick, and then that person may or may not get hospitalized, and then end up in the intensive care unit, and they get put on an intubator, and then eventually die. And that process can take a long time. And the nature of COVID is most people don't die of the viremia. They don't die of the virus itself. They die of the after effects that take sometimes weeks to occur. So lagging indicator in that sense.
All right. So if we're going to talk about indicators, then positive tests would be indicator one. Hospitalizations would lag behind that, and then deaths behind that as well.
Right.
Okay. So when you say viremia, I guess it's a curious subject of mine. When you know, we get out of looking at the COVID numbers and stuff, just the way that viruses and the body interact, it seems like some of the things that happen are caused by our immune response to viruses in the body.
Yeah, that's the killer for COVID. You know, the virus gets into your cells. Those cells make more virus. They burst open. They go around the body, and that's destructive. You know, you've got lung cells and maybe cardiac cells and blood cells that are struggling to handle the assault by the virus. But generally, that, you know, we mount an immune response that fights it off. But sometimes that immune response can be so aggressive or misdirected that those cells start attacking our own body, causing inflammation in the lungs or the heart or the kidney or the brain. And that's where almost all of the long-term after effects occur, and that's generally how death occurs.
So in some cases, is the process of treating people who've got a virus that's moving quickly to actually try to slow down their immune system somewhat?
So the different treatments for COVID depend on where in the process you are. If you are just infected, then we're going to try and give you antibodies to stop the process in its tracks if we can. Once the virus is spreading, we want to give you antiviral medications to attack the virus itself. And then once the inflammation occurs, we want anti-inflammatory drugs like steroids. And so we have different tools, and they depend on where in the infectious process you are as to which tools are appropriate. If you give the antivirals after the virus has already left the body, they're of no effect. If you give the steroids early in the process, you might inhibit the body's natural ability to fight off the infection.
Oh, wow. So timing really is critical then, and this is something that people had to figure out in the early days of COVID.
Exactly. And in many cases, they figured it out wrong. An example would be, you know, the first information from China we had is intubate people early. And in fact, that was based upon assumptions of how other diseases operated. And it took us a while to realize that you want to put somebody on a ventilator as a kind of a last resort.
In terms of the body's response, I recall hearing that with the quote-unquote Spanish flu of a century ago, a cytokine storm, a real strong immune response from the body was what caused so many deaths. Is there anything comparable to that with COVID?
Yeah, I think it is comparable. I think it's similar in the sense of what seemed to kill people back in 1918 is similar in process to what's killing people now. One of the major differences is the age groups. COVID's been a killer for, you know, people with weakened immune systems, either due to age or disease. And in the case of the 1918 flu, it looks like younger people were much more susceptible.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that too, people with stronger immune systems, yeah. Dr. Jim Shames, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from Jackson County Health and Human Services, Jackson County's medical director. We're doing our weekly COVID Q&A, and you're welcome to join in at 800-838-3760 on the phone. 800-838-3760. What happened to my tongue there? 800-838-3760. And email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Connie in Eugene. Welcome.
Good morning, gentlemen. For some time, I've been trying to find out a good site, perhaps an independent website, to find out about efficacy and how long the vaccines are actually good for, effective in terms of our antibody response. And I don't know if you have information on that, or you could direct me to a website where I could find out, possibly one not run by the drug company, where there's been independent testing over the months of people's immune responses.
Have you taken a look at the CDC sites, Connie?
No, that's what I was trying to get, a better, you know, maybe a more specific site, or if you knew something about that.
Okay, yeah, just Googling CDC and vaccine efficacy. I got a couple of different hits, including morbidity and mortality reports. But let me let Jim Shames get in here now.
Okay, thank you.
No, I agree with you, Jeff. There's so much information out there that I think it's really helpful to have somebody who will vet it for us, sort through kind of, and I think the CDC does that well, the World Health Organization does that well, and they're very conservative in the sense of, you know, they're very thoughtful about what they decide to put on their website, but I would say you can trust the information from those sources. They're governmental agencies, they're not affiliated with pharmaceuticals, they don't make money one way or the other, depending on what data they put forward. Not to say there aren't politics sometimes involved, but I trust those sites, and that's where I would go first.
Yeah, I find when I was looking at the list that I was talking to Connie about that, CDC vaccine efficacy is the place I started, Connie, and then it kind of added Delta variant on the way through. And there are a couple of CDC sites, and then I ended up at other places like Healthline. And, of course, the first question I have is, who puts out Healthline? You always want to know who's behind putting up a certain site and if they've got a particular angle on it as you go out there and do the research. I love the primary sources, though, because they tend to have the original testing information. So let's talk a little further about vaccines. And coming back to yesterday's release from Jackson County Health and Human Services Public Health Division about the COVID-19 update, there are a couple of quotes from you, Dr. Shames, in yesterday's release, including one about the most serious effects showing up, obviously, on the elderly. Colin Powell's death at age 84 was a big story yesterday, still today. When you look at his particular health situation, what else do you see?
Well, Colin Powell had multiple myeloma, which is a serious cancer that affects the whole body and the immune system. And between the disease he had and whatever treatments he was getting, I'm sure he was very immunosuppressed. And what that means is if you are immunosuppressed at the time you get vaccinated, you may not mount much of, or you may not mount any antibody response to the vaccine. So he could be, you know, seen as an 84-year-old gentleman with serious underlying health conditions who was not protected from COVID by the vaccine. And if that's the case, then, you know, it's unfortunate but not surprising he would succumb to the disease.
Yeah, multiple myeloma and Parkinson's disease, apparently, too. I was hearing just this morning from an interview with him with Bob Woodward just a couple of months ago. Obviously, a lot of chatter about his being fully vaccinated, which I've already referred to, but But you're saying in some people, just there's limited utility. When I look at 84, that was one of the first things that jumped out.
Yeah. And you know, the vaccines are not perfect. Even very healthy people who were immunocompetent at the time of getting their shots, you know, if you look at the data, they are still, you know, at risk of getting hospitalized, sick, and dying from COVID, much, much less than if they were vaccinated. That data is quite clear, but they're not out of the woods entirely.
I wanted to come back to some of the numbers here, and I know I tend to live in numbers, but, you know, they help tell a story here when you're measuring things. And we talked about death as a lagging indicator and about the fact that we had a few good months leading up to the middle of the summer, and then things started to go haywire again with the Delta variant. So Oregon, for example, took eight months to get from 2,000 deaths to 3,000 deaths, but just 2 months from August to October to get from 3,000 to 4,000, which is a rather stark figure.
Yeah, the Delta variant kind of took us by surprise, and it took us by storm. It was very aggressive, especially here. And, you know, we're clearly on the downside from that spike. And, you know, if we do things right and the virus behaves itself, this really might be the lull that we were expecting to continue after the last spike last winter.
Okay, so not a lull that is then ended, but you're thinking a lull that could continue?
I do. You know, one of the things that happened with this spike was that a lot of people who didn't get vaccinated, were resistant to getting vaccinated, got COVID. And so at this point, we've got our vaccination rates plus the people who have natural immunity from disease, and there's just fewer susceptible individuals for the disease to spread. There's still, you know, plenty, but plenty less than we had 3 months ago. And I think that unless there's a new variant and, the mandates are doing the job they were intended to do, which is that our vaccination rates are much higher than they were. So I think we're heading in a reasonable direction. I'm somewhat optimistic about it.
All right, we had vaccine mandates, as you mentioned, click in for several groups of people as of yesterday. We had a piece in the news segment at the top of the hour in the morning talking about the fact that the school districts report pretty good compliance up into the upper 90s anyway, 90 percentiles. Yeah. Vaccine mandates for health workers, though, I mean, mostly compliance. There were some people who said, nope, not doing this, and actually protested outside of the hospital in Medford. Recently, have you talked to people working in healthcare who will not get vaccinated?
I mostly hear stories. Mm-hmm. I have been doing like a listening tour, and I'm willing to listen to any group that would like to do a Q&A with me. I did one yesterday, and although these are not hospitals, these are organizations that tend to take care of people who are, you know, in vulnerable situations like nursing homes or homeless shelters and things like that. And so I try and stay in touch that way.
Okay, we're talking to Dr. Jim Shames once again on the Jefferson Exchange, our weekly COVID Q&A. You're welcome to join at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Holdover question we didn't get to last week. Janet, no town given, asks further about the monoclonal antibodies you've been talking up a few times here now. Wants to know, how do we schedule an appointment for the monoclonal treatment, or do we just show up? What's the procedure there?
I think the procedure is that you need a referral from a healthcare provider who has kind of heard your story, decided you're an appropriate person for treatment, and then you would presumably call Asante or La Clinica or Providence or one of the organizations that are providing the service and probably schedule an appointment. You know, it's like they'd say, show up at 2 o'clock, you go in and then. And at Black Oak, the one that I know the best, through Asante, it would be drive-through. You would drive in, you would get your series of subcutaneous shots, and you'd be watched for a while and they go home. So it's a pretty slick system, but you do need a healthcare provider involved. And I suspect that if you didn't have one, that you would probably be able to go through their call-in urgent care. But I don't. I don't know the exact details, but I do know that we're set up to do it.
And remind people who who's in a position to get monoclonal, at what point in your progression should you seek them out?
Right. So if you have COVID and you are high risk, and in this case it would be elderly, or you have a serious underlying condition, or if you work in a high-risk situation like a healthcare setting or something like that, you would qualify. And the sooner you get the treatment, the better.
Okay, let us take a call from, let's see, this is Isaac in Etna, California. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, how's it going? Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hey, I was just wondering, why isn't there a little bit more talk about natural immunity? I know a lot of people have gotten the virus and are, you know, healthy, have beaten it, but they're still being forced to vaccinate despite those natural antibodies being built. And, there's just push for this vaccine. At this point, you know, in California, mandating children to get vaccinated to even attend school. When many of the kids, especially in our community, have already gone through it and kicked its butt.
Okay, let's pick it up there. Thanks for the question, Isaac. Appreciate that. And I did see some other a fairly famous radio host this morning was celebrating the fact that he had gotten it because he prefers natural immunity to vaccine immunity. Talk about that, Jim Shames.
Well, I mean, the basic point of the fact that we have this parallel way for people to get protected, which is they get the disease, is absolutely true. And I'm not exactly sure why there's not a little more attention to natural immunity. But, you know, the implication is, you know, that the vaccine's bad and, you know, dodge the vaccine bullet by getting the actual disease. That's really not the public health perspective. The public health perspective is the vaccine is really quite safe and extremely effective and provides different immunity, in some cases additional protection than the disease itself. There's a lot of unknowns about the disease, and it still appears that some people with mild disease may end up not producing as much of a defense as people who got seriously ill. So we're kind of on solid ground with the vaccine and protection from it. And we don't really know who got it, who didn't, who got tested, who didn't. So it's complicated. With the vaccine, we know exactly who got what and when they got it. So the recommendation for getting vaccinated extends to those who've already had the disease, with the understanding that if you truly had the disease, you probably have pretty good protection for an unknown period of time. So that's my take on it. I don't really see it as controversial as the caller does, but I do agree. I think we should be trying to estimate how many people have natural immunity and using that data to help us decide how much risk there is in any particular situation.
Because it does figure in how many people are likely to get it again or get it in the first time. There's that.
Yeah, as I said earlier, I think that's why our numbers have dropped and why our numbers, I'm hoping, will stay kind of low, is because, unfortunately, you know, a good number of our population has gotten infected and recovered and now are protected.
Susan in Ashland emails and asks, why not recommend everyone keep home testing to see who is actually passing it around without knowing it, even the vaccinated?
Yeah. You know, that's a strategy, and I personally think it's a really good strategy. It hasn't been one that was fully embraced by the CDC. And so I can certainly imagine scenarios where access to quick tests, readily available, inexpensive, everybody's got them. I think that would be a really good thing. I think we've been slow in developing the supply chain for that, slow in embracing the concept of it. So that may come, but it's not a very viable strategy at the moment.
Okay. And final question before we go, which is about mix and match boosters. It looks like the FDA is beginning to come around to the idea that if you got one, you can boost with the other.
Yeah, and that's been a concept really from the very beginning, people talking about the fact that, you know, it's not vaccine specific, the immune response. Immune response is very complicated, and people have been learning for a while. Why not try take two different vaccines with two different mechanisms and combine the ability of both? So scientifically, it makes sense. It looks like the FDA is going to fully approve that soon for all the vaccines, and I think it's a good idea, especially for Johnson & Johnson. I think that's a vaccine where getting an mRNA for a second shot makes a lot of sense.
All right. Dr. Jim Shames, Jackson County Medical Director at Jackson County Health and Human Services, joining us for our weekly COVID Q&A, and let's keep pulling for lower numbers next week when we talk again.
Good to talk to you.